The following episode deals with explicit descriptions of violence that can be disturbing or distressing to some listeners. These include descriptions of murder, torture, death, and rape, and sound effects that recall violence and gunfire. Please be advised. If you want to skip these parts of the podcast, timestamps with specific trigger warnings can be found on our website or on the description section of wherever you're listening to this episode. Filipinos tend to be very familial about the way we think and feel. In fact, it's one of our most defining sociological traits. It's no surprise, then, the rise of Bongbong Marcos from that perspective. It might baffle every single foreign journalist, analyst, professor, but it makes sense from a Filipino perspective. Bongbong Marcos' entire platform bleeds family. He talks about running as the only way he can protect his family from the slander that his family has experienced after his father, Marcos Sr., the dictator, was deposed by hundreds of thousands of Filipinos in 1986. His home region feels protective of him, having benefited always in a little bubble during the Marcos reign, and having been spared the very worst of the tortures of martial law. Of course, Bongbong also spends money like nobody's business, and makes powerful friends feel like family, just like his father did in his own elections all those years ago. Welcome to Yugto, a podcast where we get mad about Filipino history. My name is Sunny, and today we are getting mad about Ferdinand Marcos, the dictator, and all the crap he pulled to stay president and pretend he was beloved. In understanding how Marcos Sr. won his elections and stayed in power, we also gain a better understanding of why Bongbong Marcos, or Marcos Jr., is so popular now, and how he learned to wield a campaign of guns, goons, and gold. It is 1965. An incumbent president, Justdado Macapagal, is fighting to stay president. He is poised to take it, if not for the Senate president, Marcos. These two men have beef. Marcos, who was actually head of the political party they were both in, had supported Macapagal's run for the presidency in 1961, because Macapagal had said at the time that he would never run for a second term. With Macapagal, surprise, surprise, refusing to budge from his seat now, Marcos's desire for power leads him to leave the party so he can run himself against his former friend and ally. His ire at Macapagal's flagrant desire to stay president will eventually prove to be extremely ironic, but we will get to that. The Philippines at this point is still trying to figure out its eventually useless party system. This coincides with the advent of mass media, the ideas of war heroes and a better world being especially important following the end of World War II in recent living memory. Books, For Every Tear of Victory, the story of Ferdinand E. Marcos, goes toe-to-toe with Macapagal, the Incorruptible. The Philippines is also seen as some kind of bastion of democracy, being the baby of the recent departed Americans. America provides a lot of support to the Philippines, and still manipulates things behind the scenes, and they have been alarmed at several events during the Macapagal administration that were seen as anti-American. As a result of these, and in order to further prove their colonization of the country a success via the exercise of democracy, Ferdinand Marcos is Washington's candidate to back. Marcos's campaign actively encourages this image. America is not the only one dissatisfied with the Macapagal administration. Filipinos in general are suffering economically. Unsurprising and quite on trend as far as post-colonized countries go as they try to find stability. So the Philippines does something which will also prove in trend till the present day. They allow their dissatisfaction with the current regime to give them tunnel vision that any change of leadership must be a good thing. In the end, Ferdinand Marcos wins with 51.94% of the vote. He promises the Philippines dreams. We all know now that this was just the beginning of an almost half-century nightmare. It is 1969, and current President Ferdinand Marcos is fighting against ex-President Sergio Osmeña for the title of next president of the Philippines. Justado Macapagal might have stabbed Marcos in the back by running when he said he wouldn't, but Osmeña, as a politician, is known to play much dirtier than him. Bribes, threats, misinformation, you name it. Marcos will have to pull out the same stops if he wants to stay in Malacañang Palace. And he surely will. Because if there's something that Marcos has settled on in the past 4 years, it is that he likes being president. And that his wife, Imelda, loves being the first lady. And by God, they're going to stay that way, one way or another. For every 1 peso Osmeña spent per vote, Marcos is spending 100. Marcos's campaign spends money freely, amassing debt, but winning hearts. If hearts prove unwinnable, then they were bought. And if they proved unbuyable, there was always good old-fashioned intimidation and ballot snatching. For example, in Batanes, his camp hired paramilitary groups. They brought their guns to terrorize the island for days, including physically beating up opposition leaders and supporters. Overseas journalists call the 1969 elections the dirtiest, most violent, and most corrupt in the Philippines' young history, with guns, goons, and gold, or the 3 G's, being the main tactics used. These call-outs don't matter. The money and promises continue to make people sing to Marcos's tune. The bullets continue to meet their targets when needed. And Marcos wins against Osmeña with 62.24% of the vote. In doing so, he also plunges the country into a major economic crisis. Remember how we mentioned that Marcos amassed debt for all his campaigning needs? Well, he makes it worse by stupidly rushing to fulfill the infrastructure promises he made during campaigning. These promises impressed voters, but the needed extra cool $50 million? Less impressive, to say the least. It isn't long before the Philippines has to have chats with the International Monetary Fund, or the IMF, for debt rescheduling and to seek help with the stabilization plan. This would be the first major economic crisis in Marcos's term, but it certainly wouldn't be the last. This would also be the first, but not last, re-election of soon-to-be dictator Ferdinand Marcos. The year is 1972. Marcos and Imelda are quite settled in, and largely and vocally consider themselves to be royals as far as the Philippines goes. Unfortunately, unlike kings and queens, their time as top dog is finite. The elections are fast approaching. In fact, they're next year. Marcos's time as president, as allowed by the current constitution, is almost up too. His 2 terms are winding down. So of course Marcos casually posits the nation, "Wouldn't it be cool if we created a new constitution? With lots of great changes for the Philippines, including allowing a person to become president more than twice?" Ferdinand Marcos makes the push, and plans for a constitutional convention begin to move forward. Unfortunately, it quickly begins to look like it's not going to be anywhere fast enough to keep Marcos's ass on the presidential seat. On the flip side, there are several things happening that are bad for the country, but good for the Marcos family. 1, the same economic crisis that he caused is making life pretty bad for everyone. People are suffering. They are going hungry. There is everyday unrest. On top of all of this, people are beginning to slowly but surely find out that the Marcos government seems less likely to listen to criticism as it is to roundhouse you in the face with a gun barrel for opening your mouth. 2, a communist threat is looming. Hate for communists and the reduction of their beliefs were inherited from our recently departed colonizers, the Americans. They are perceived as shifty-eyed shadows, eager to destabilize the country and willing to kill and conquer to do it. Marcos, the strongman president, has to do something to protect the country from these unseen villains. Of course he does. So, Marcos declares martial law. And of course, while the country is in a state of martial law, he declares he has to stay as president to secure the stability of the nation. It is indefinite at the time, but perceived as necessary. Marcos staying as president is supposed to be this grand act of service to the nation. And hey, it will only stay for as long as martial law is needed, right? Martial law goes on for another 20 years. Somehow, the threat continues for so many years that Marcos keeps extending his regime. Also, somehow, the hunt for communists entails massacres in various parts of the Philippines, and the murders and tortures of anyone who questioned Marcos in any way. Yay security, I guess. Marcos, of course, tried to give this a semblance of legality. You can cheat and stuff, but you need to put in at least a little bit of effort to look legit, you know? So in 1973, the Philippines has a martial law referendum, where citizens' assemblies are supposed to vote for Marcos's desired change for the constitution and the indefinite continuation of martial law. The exact question asked is, do you want President Marcos to continue beyond 1973 and finish the reforms he has initiated under martial law? Which, phrasing-wise, was very self-aggrandizing, but either way did not matter. Supposedly tens of thousands of assemblies called never met. There was no proper documentation of actual counts either. Instead of paper ballots, a lot of assemblies reported voting simply through showing of hands. Somehow, someway, anyhow, anyway, the referendum still ends with 90.67% saying yes. 17,653,200 votes. And thus, convenience and excuse continue, with the continued support of guns, goons, and gold. Marcos keeps his seat. He even keeps it through another referendum in 1977, which asked a similar question, and where a convenient 89.27% of people were happy with his performance and the now-known violence of his cronies. How convenient and flattering. But Marcos, of course, is no stranger to convenience and flattery. Remember, he wanted to try to change the constitution to stay president even before the martial law proclamation. This speaks to his priority being the same as every other oligarch in the Philippines: the need to stay in power. Marcos and his weapon, martial law, settle in for the long haul. He can't even remember being afraid he'd be deposed as president. Now, he and Imelda will be here forever. And when he dies? Whatever, his son or daughter will run for president, and they'll use the same strategies to make sure it stays in the family. They truly are kings and queens now. And the decades of torture and robbery of the Filipino people continue. Though there were surely armed communist movements at the time, much of retrospective documentation of those years notes that the threat of communism was very overblown. The fears of the common people were stroked, and Marcos had the convenient excuse he needed to stay president. He used it the same way he would use it again for the next 20 years to rape and murder people as innocuous as missionaries and students who disagreed with the government. It feels at one point that it really will never end. But now the year is 1986. While being interviewed on This Week with David Brinkley, an American news program, Marcos declares in an almost casual way that he will be holding a snap election. While the move is seemingly out of nowhere, the cause at least is more than apparent. A few years of intensified scrutiny from the world and an increased hate for the Marcos family. See, Filipinos at this point have grown accustomed to living in fear. People are periodically killed or tortured for being critical of the Marquesas, or simply for being on the wrong side of his cronies and their interests. This fear might have continued to suppress the masses, had Marcos or his cronies not taken the chance in dispatching several high-profile figureheads of the opposition, including and especially one Ninoy Aquino. Who is Ninoy Aquino? A journalist and Marcos's main political rival and outspoken critic. Aquino stayed in the United States for a long time for his own protection. But on one fateful day that 1986, he uttered the famous words, "The Filipino is worth dying for," and flew home. As every Filipino knows, and as much as the Marcos family today avoids talking about it, Ninoy Aquino never made it out of the airport or even onto the tarmac. He was assassinated there, on the stairs leading from the plane. No one is sure who put the bullet through Aquino's head, but they know for sure who is indirectly responsible. Ninoy's death is latched onto by every person who hates the rampant violence and corruption during martial law. News outlets overseas are equally hungry to grab the story and broadcast to the world how flagrant Marcos's actions were and the undeniable growing unrest and pushback from the public. Protests begin to increase. Local publications begin to grow increasingly critical. And overseas publications began breaking stories of illegal investments and wide-scale corruption. Marcos needs something to shut people up, or at least silence some of the criticisms for a while. He wants support from international allies, especially America. He also needs international financial support, because it turns out, he and Imelda are exceptionally good at stealing money from the people and plunging the Philippines into crippling debt over and over, for the love of foreign buildings or private islands or shoes and other frivolities. Holding an election that might show people's impartial love for him might mime his commitment to democracy enough to get people off his back, and the money flowing into the office again, he figures. When Marcos announces his snap elections plan, a lot of skepticism ensues. After all, he has enough party mates and bootlickers in the National Assembly to vote against the snap election if need be. And who would want to run for president, knowing that even someone as lofty as Ninoy Aquino in the opposition could be shot dead in broad daylight? Nevertheless, Marcos commits to the act, and his opponent, Ninoy's wife, Corazon Aquino, nervously steps up to the plate. Cory Aquino does not know what she's doing. She had thought that the opposition would nominate Doy Laurel, son of ex-president Jose P. Laurel, to go toe-to-toe with Marcos. Nevertheless, she campaigns with earnestness. She is the widow of a martyr, the face of the many who have lost someone to the Marcos regime. She is a mother and very well looks like her charisma and story alone might buoy her to be the mother of the nation. Marcos, on the other hand, does as he always does. The guns and the goons and the gold need not be full force now. After all, they've been his main weapons throughout all these years of martial law. He does not need to scare people who are already scared. He and his cronies just buy votes blatantly now. He sends men with guns to literally snatch away ballot boxes from the precincts. Numbers were openly tampered with. Dishearteningly but unsurprisingly, only 76% of people bravely vote during the snap election. The numbers don't crunch as fast as they do with today's computers. But at the end of it all, Marcos wins. The news reports that he has 53.62% of the vote. Cory is a close second, with 46.1%. During this count, 35 computer programmers helping with the count walk out and seek sanctuary in a church, later broadcasting to all via an interview that the Marcos camp did do what everyone already suspected. They manipulated the elections. Worst of all, many die during and after these elections, all in their quest to protect the real democracy that Marcos was playing out. And Marcos? He is president again. He gets to buy his wife more shoes and buildings. He gets to put more money in his friends' pockets. He gets to keep sanctioning the rape and torture and murder of people who get on his and his friends' bad sides. However, he soon finds he cannot do what he originally set out to do with the snap election. He cannot silence the public, quell the critics, or get the foreign media on his side. Marcos wins the snap election, but he fails the people, just as he has done over and over and over again in his long unjust dictatorship. The people will end up answering in kind, of course. There would be no election to remove Marcos, but a revolution. At worst, people misinformedly say that martial law was good for the people, and that Ferdinand Marcos won his elections fair and square, purely through the love of the people. We've learned that both of these things are simply untrue. Some people had it good during martial law, to be sure. But the unchangeable fact is, so many people suffered. People who braved violence to see an end to the regime. And in the first place, Marcos bribed, cheated, intimidated, and outright murdered people to have the regime happen in the first place. Today, Bongbong Marcos emulates the same strategy as his father. The bribery, yes. The cheating, to be sure. And the violence? An attack on bodies has evolved into an attack on truth, on history, on facts, on memory. The rampant misinformation and fake news about the martial law period is everywhere. His campaign takes advantage of the low digital literacy of Filipinos, and he is relentless and unapologetic about it. Today, we stand against it. We say, make your vote count, and do not let this legacy of guns, goons, and gold continue. Thanks for listening. Yugto is narrated, researched, and written by Sunny, and is supported by the Work in Progress team. Sources and any subsequent correction of facts for this episode can be found on our website. For more information about the horrors of martial law, listen to Yugto Season 1, The Murders of Martial Law. For more on how the Marcos campaign uses the digital space to spread anti-historical propaganda, follow me at sunny_bunny_tan on TikTok. Support us on Spotify, Anchor, and YouTube, or email us for any questions at whipinc.ph@gmail.com. Our sixth episode, in particular, explores the assassination of Ninoy Aquino more in depth. To find out more about the assassinations of 1986 that will eventually lead to the People Power Revolution, stay tuned to our next episode. To find out more about how Ferdinand Marcos frauded his way to staying in power through a bunch of bogus elections, see our previous episode in this season,